metal pressed against her wrists, and when she tried to pull away, she heard the clink of steel on steel. Her hands were cuffed to something to her right. She turned until she was facing it and raised her hands, questing with her fingers until she found a flat metal bar, like a piece of scaffolding. Kate pulled as hard as she could, but it didn't give. She curled her fingers around the metal and hoisted herself to her feet, slowly, in case the ceiling was low. 3 feet up, her cuffs caught on a crossbar, forcing her to stop. So she sank back to her knees and followed the vertical line of the pole to the concrete floor, where it was screwed down with some kind of metal plate. She wasn't going anywhere with that. She twisted her head, straining to hear something, anything, over the sound of her pulse and her good ear. At first, there was nothing. But then, muffled by concrete and metal and whatever else stood between her and the outside world, she heard a voice. Sweet and smooth and on the verge of laughter. Sloane. Kate gritted her teeth, torn between shouting his name until he showed up and staying silent until she had a way to kill him. As she listened, more sounds reached her, muffled by the walls between. A scrape of metal, a stifled groan of pain, and her stomach turned. August. August, trembling in the hall, his black eyes wide with fear and hunger. Get the Sunai. Kate dragged in air, forced herself to focus. She had to get out of here. Her lighter was gone, lost during the fight, which meant no weapon and no way to see what she was doing. She didn't have anything to pick the handcuff locks, and another muffled scream beyond the walls. She cringed, fought back the shudder of fear. Somewhere a different Kate could be terrified, but she didn't have time. So she forced it down and felt her way back to the place where the pole was screwed into the floor. She felt 4 screws, all half rusted into place. The frame was solid enough, but if she could get the base free, she might be able to torque it and slide the cuffs beneath the frame. She'd worry about getting them off later. Being handcuffed wasn't as bad as being handcuffed to something. Kate took a deep breath and exhaled, her breath catching as another sob carried on the air. She tried to turn a screw free, but it didn't budge. She pried until her fingers ached, twisted until her nails cracked. Nothing. She closed her eyes and tried to think, her fingers drifting to the pendant against her sternum. Her eyes flashed open. She pressed herself against the bar until she could reach the metal's chain and dig it out from under the sweater's collar. It wasn't a very elegant gesture, but soon she got the pendant up over her head and wedged the metal's edge into the screw's groove, praying it was the right size. It fit. She twisted as hard as she could. Twice her finger slipped, skinning her knuckles raw. But then, at last, the first screw began to turn. And several curse-filled moments later, it came free. One down, she thought. 3 to go. Sloane's voice rose and fell beyond the door. She jammed the silver disc in the next screw. A horrible thud, like metal against flesh, bar against bone. She twisted, slipped, twisted again. A stifled sob. Hold on, August, she pleaded as the second screw began to turn. Hold on. Chapter 6. A drop of blood hit the concrete, viscous and black.
There's only one way this ends, said Sloane, running a nail along the bar's jagged edge.
August tried to drag in air. The Maokai had struck him across the face, and blood was running from his nose and over the tape across his mouth. He was choking, on blood, on terror. And every time his vision slipped, he thought of Elsa. Elsa, standing in front of the window, fingers cracking the glass.
So many stars.
Elsa's reflection in the mirror, chin resting on his shoulder.
I watched them all go out.
Ilsa lying on the floor of the traitor's cell, singing him to sleep.
Right before I cut her throat.
His lungs ached, his vision swam.
Hold on, he begged his body.
And then an electric buzz filled the air, and whatever was holding August up disappeared. The chains went slack, and he crumpled, hitting the ground hard, his wrists still raw and wrapped in chains.
Sloane, warned the other Maokai.
August tried to get to his feet and failed. The warehouse twisted and blurred until it was a bedroom, an alley, a school. Someone was calling a name, his name, and then he was standing in the forest, brushing his fingers against the trees, and he could hear music, humming, and Kate looked back with a frown, and then pain exploded against his side, and he crumpled. He tried to roll onto his back, but the concrete was cold and rising over him like water, and he was in the bath, his fingers curled around the edge, and Kate's over his while the water fell like rain, and he was burning, burning, burning from the inside. And the darkness was waiting, waiting, waiting just beyond the light. Sloane was towering over him, all shadows save for those vivid red eyes. He raised the bar to strike, but as he brought it down, August's hands flew up and caught the metal. Darkness curled up around his fingers like steam.
Let go, August, said Sloane, putting his weight behind the bar.
Cold wicked along the metal, meeting the heat of August's touch. His grip tightened, his vision fixed on his fingers, wishing he had the control to slide between the forms like his brother. Leo could turn a part of himself without losing the whole, because there was no whole left. Nothing human, nothing real. Somewhere beyond the pool of light, metal scraped across the concrete. August squinted and saw that the darkness wasn't solid after all. Massive objects loomed in the shadows, and a corridor branched off toward the noise, a pair of doors at the very end giving way to the paler dark of night.
Oslo, said Sloane, still leaning on the bar above him. Go see to Kate.
August's pulse pounded in his broken chest.
Run!
He willed her, even now. The other Maokai turned to go.
And don't kill her, added Sloane. Don't worry, smirked the monster. I'll leave you some of... You'll leave me all of her, warned Sloane.
His tone was icy and slick, his dead lips tight over his teeth. Heat flared through August's skin.
You can end this,
said the monster, his attention back on the bar. And August knew he could, but he also knew that the moment he did, the Maokai would drive the metal down into his chest, and it would tear past what had been flesh, and what would be smoke and shadow and into his burning heart. And he would be gone. Whatever he was made of, stardust or ash or life or death, would be gone. Not with a bang, but with a whimper. In with gunfire and out with smoke. And August wasn't ready to die. Even if surviving wasn't simple or easy or fair. Even if he could never be human. He wanted the chance to matter. He wanted to live. By the time Kate got the last screw free, her hands were shaking and sweat was running down her face. She yanked the screw out, grabbed the metal frame, and pulled. It didn't move. She swore and wrenched, putting all her weight behind it, but the bar was still stuck. Exhausted, Kate leaned her head against the metal and felt it slip forward off the base. Her breath caught in surprise, then relief as she gripped the metal and shoved. The bar ground forward, scraping over the concrete with a screech, and Kate cringed. So much for stealth. She managed to torque the bar enough to get the cuffs beneath and scrambled to her feet. Footsteps echoed in the hall beyond, and she held her breath, back pressed into the wall beside the door, wishing she had a weapon. Something. Anything. But she wasn't going down again. Not without a fight. The metal door slid open, casting a skeletal shadow into the room. Thin light fell on the warped bar, the cast-off screws, the place where Kate should be. The monster hissed and started forward, but something wrenched him back into the hall. There was a choking sound, and the wet slick of a wound, and then nothing. Kate held her breath as a second shadow passed before the door, then disappeared. In the distance, Sloane's voice echoed, sickly sweet. Kate counted to 10, then peeled herself away from the wall and went to find him. August was slipping, edges blurring into shadow. He lay onto his side, his face against the floor, and listened for the heartbeat of the world. He didn't hear it, but he heard footsteps, soft, steady. And then a shadow moved beyond the ring of light. He squinted. It wasn't the Maokai. It wasn't Kate. It moved too slowly. Its stride was too even. The shadow drew itself together out of the darkness and became a man, tall and handsome, with blonde hair and eyes as flat and black as night. Leo. His eyes found August's, and black blood dripped from his fingers as he brought them to his lips in a command for silence. His expression was even, assessing, as he drifted silently forward to the edge of the light. August coughed, tried to push himself onto his hands and knees as Sloane loomed over him, red eyes fixed and waiting. "Look at me," thought August tiredly. "Look at me." Leo stepped noiselessly into the light as darkness pooled beneath August like smoke. A smile crept across Sloane's face. "It's over, little monster," he said, lifting the metal bar. August braced himself, but before Sloane could strike, the pole was gone. One moment it was in his hand, and the next it was in Leo's, and then, in a single fluid motion, his brother drove the metal up through the Maokai's back. Sloane let out a strangled scream and staggered forward, nails clawing at the jagged metal edge protruding from his collar, as black gore dripped down his shirt. He spun toward Leo, but lost his balance, staggered and fell to one knee. "My brother's death," said Leo, as Sloane doubled over, retching blood. "Wasn't part of the deal." Sloane's lips curled back, teeth bared as he tried and failed to form words. And then his body shuddered, bones twitching before he finally collapsed to the concrete. August rested his forehead on the ground. Leo's shadow fell over him, and he rolled onto his back and looked up, meeting his brother's gaze. For a moment, all he felt was relief. And then, for some reason, a prickle of fear. The look in Leo's black eyes wasn't shock or vindication. It was disappointment.
"Hello, little brother."
Leo knelt and tore the duct tape from August's mouth, and August gasped, choking on the cold night air. He coughed, spit black blood onto the floor. He tried to speak, but the words had no sound. Leo tilted his head.
"What was that?"
August tried again.
"I said,"
he managed between ragged breaths.
"What deal?"
Leo gave August a pitying look, as if it should have been obvious. A deal with Sloane. A deal between two monsters who wanted to start a war.
"What have you done?"
Leo took hold of the chain around August's wrists and hauled him to his feet.
"What needed to be done?"
August swayed.
You told them about me. You sent me to that school, and then you told Sloane I was there."
He didn't deny it.
"Does Henry know?"
Henry Flynn has grown tired and weak, said Leo. He is no longer fit to lead us.
But Ilsa...
Our sister should have stayed out of the way.
He shook his head.
Her loss hurts our mission, but I have hope for you.
August started shaking his head and couldn't stop.
You betrayed our family.
They lost sight of our cause,
he said, grip tightening on the chains.
The city needs us, August. Not just south or north, the whole city. Poison spreads. Violence spreads. Everything spreads. We cannot hide behind these truces and seams and wait. We are Sunai. We were made to cleanse this world, not hide and let it rot. We have a purpose, August. It is time you rose to it.
Henry will never forgive you.
I do not need his forgiveness. He is a human.
Leo sounded disgusted.
He cannot see beyond his own fear, his own desire to survive.
You're just another monster.
August tried to pull free, pull away, but Leo didn't let go.
I am Sunai, he said.
I am holy fire, and if I have to burn the world to cleanse it, so help me, I will.
He took August's face in his hand, a gesture that could have been gentle but wasn't. A thumb beneath his jaw forced August's gaze up to meet his own, the black of his eyes at once flat and endless.
Where is she, little brother?
Kate. August saw the truth in his brother's eyes. Leo was going to finish what he started. He was going to kill her. But August couldn't answer what he didn't know. He shook his head. Leo hissed.
You protect a sinner.
To protect our family, our city. Killing her will start a war. A small, grim smile.
The war is already starting. And I'm not going to kill her, little brother. You are.
Chapter 7. The first thing Kate saw was the body. The second Maokai was slumped across from the open door, black gore dripping down its front where its chest had been torn open, the shield of its ribs shattered. Kate crouched and picked up a shard of bone, slick but sharp in her fingers. It wasn't a knife, but it would have to do. She straightened, looked around. In one direction, beyond the warehouse's open doors, the night waited, an empty dirt lot giving way to fields. In the other direction, slumped in a pool of light, knelt August. August, bruised and bleeding, smoke trailing from him like a dying fire. Someone was standing over him, and at first she thought it must be Sloane, but as she drew closer, she saw the Maokai's body crumpled on the ground. And then she registered the new figure's height, the breadth of his shoulders, the glint of light on fair hair, and realized it was Leo. Relief flooded through her at the sight of August alive, and Sloane dead. But then Leo hauled his brother to his feet, and she saw the pain written on August's bloody face. Heard it threading through his broken voice as he pleaded with his brother and tried to pull away. Kate took a step back, and it must have been the blood-shined surface of the bone in her hand, or her movement against a still backdrop, but August's eyes found hers in the dark. And even from the distance, she could see them widen, not with relief, but fear. An instant later, Leo's head swiveled too, his black eyes narrowing. There was no kindness in that look, no mercy. Kate stumbled backward and nearly fell over the body of the other Maokai as Leo let go of August and drew something from his coat. At first, she thought it was a gun, the metal glinting in the pool of light. But then she saw. It was an instrument. A flute, no bigger than his hands. He raised it to his lips, and Kate drew in a breath, waiting for the music before she realized it was meant for her.
Run!
Shouted August, throwing himself at his brother. The two went down on the concrete as Kate turned and sprinted out toward the night. August was no match for Leo. He was too young, too hungry, handcuffed and broken, and the older Sunai threw him off and stormed out of the circle of light into the corridor. August struggled to his feet and surged after his brother with the last of his strength. Stop! He called as Leo stepped out into the night. August stumbled after him, one knee buckling as he reached the doors. He dragged himself back up, but fell again as Leo lifted the flute to his lips and played the first note. A soft, sweet sound that whistled through the air like wind. No! Screamed August, trying to break the melody. But it was no use. Kate was running, her hands up against her ears, but as soon as the music started, her steps faltered, slowed, stopped. Her hands slipped from her head, drifting calmly back to her sides. No! August tried to stand again, but couldn't. He knelt there, watching the red light drift to the surface of Kate's skin as she turned back toward them. Leo's music unmooring her soul and August's mind at the same time. When Ilsa had hummed, he felt peace. But when Leo played, he felt like he was breaking apart, dissolving into darkness, which he was. Somewhere beneath the heat and pain, he felt the scratch of a new mark. Another day. 424. And none of it mattered, because he was burning, falling. Kate's lips moved, and as she drifted closer, he could hear the words. Her confession. Thought he was going to hurt me. I didn't have to shoot him, but it seemed like the easiest thing to do. He could have been lying. I've forgotten what the truth looks like. I don't know who to trust anymore. Let her go, Leo, begged August. Please. The Sunai stopped playing and Kate stood there, a few paces away, her features lost beneath the blaze of light.
Take her.
No.
Her soul is red.
No.
You too have sinned, little brother, said Leo. Sinned against your nature and against our cause.
His words forced their way into August's fracturing mind.
You have such potential. Together, we will do great things. But first you must atone. Now stand up.
August rose, shaking, to his feet. Darkness curled around his body and drifted like steam from his limbs. The tally marks across his skin were fading one by one.
I am not a monster.
Enough, little brother.
I am not.
His heart lurched in his chest.
Give in to it.
I am.
He could feel himself crumbling.
Embrace your true form,
ordered Leo. And his words rolled through August, sweeping away the last of his strength. August knew that he was right, knew what he had to do. He stopped fighting. And as soon as he did, the pain dissolved, and the fire went out, and he fell down, down, down into darkness. Chapter 8 Kate stood alone in the night and felt nothing. No panic. No fear. Even when the music stopped, it kept playing in her head, twining with the light, the red light. Did everyone have the same amount, like blood? There was so much of it. She heard herself speaking but couldn't focus on the words, couldn't focus on anything but the man in front of her and the boy behind him. The boy knelt there on the ground, wrists bound, looking so hurt, so scared. And she wished she could give him her calm. The boy, who was he? Not a boy, but a monster. Not a monster, but a boy. And then the music finally began to fade, withdrawing from her head, and Kate's thoughts seeped together into a name. August. Why was August on the ground? And who was the man? Kate fought against the haze. Everything was far away, but her mind was shifting and sorting, finding order. It was Leo standing before her and August behind him. Only he wasn't on his knees anymore. He was getting to his feet, darkness wicking off his shoulders like steam. And then, between one moment and the next, he changed. His face went smooth, and all the tension vanished from his mouth and eyes, the weight falling from his shoulders. His head tipped forward, the black curls swallowing his face as shadows rolled across his skin. They spread out from his chest, spilled down his limbs, blanketed flesh and bone. And for a moment, he was nothing but a plume of smoke. And then the smoke drew in like a breath, began to shift and tighten, carving out the lines of a body, its edges traced with firelight. Where there had been a boy, now there was a monster. Tall and graceful and terrifying. The chains crumbled from its wrists, blew away like ash, and when it lifted its head, its black eyes gazed wide and empty, lightless, shineless, matte as the sky on a moonless night. Smoke trailed up over the creature's head into horns and billowed behind its back into wings that shed curls of fire like burning paper. And there, in the center of its body, cracking through the darkness like a smoldering coal, its heart pulsed with fiery, inconstant light. Kate's eyes watered as she stared at the creature. She couldn't look away. The fire crackled and burned in the cavity of its chest, and its edges, limbs, wings, horns, wavered against the dark. And it was mesmerizing, the way the blaze had been in the chapel that night. A thing made and then set free. That fire had started with the flick of a match, and this had started with a boy. Leo stepped out of the way, and the creature craned its head toward Kate. "August," she said. But it wasn't him. There was no August in its face, only shadow. No August in its eyes, only ember and ash. Kate tried to retreat, but under the monster's gaze, she couldn't. She was frozen, not from fear, but from something else. Something deeper. Her body was no longer listening, not to her. The red light still danced across her skin, and she marveled at the way a whole life could be distilled into something so simple. The way a death could be folded into a touch. The Sunai took a step toward her. It didn't move like other monsters. Didn't twitch and shudder like the Korsai, or slither and strike like the Maokai. No. It moved like smoke, dancing forward on a breeze she couldn't feel, a song she couldn't hear. Its hand floated up, fingertips burning. The heat brushed the air before her, and the fear finally caught up. She tried so hard to pull away, to fight the hold of the red light wrapped around her skin. Tears streamed down her cheeks, but she didn't close her eyes. "I'm not afraid of death," she whispered, meeting the creature's gaze as it reached for her. She didn't know if August was still inside, if he could hear her, if he would care. "I'm not afraid," she said, bracing herself for the Sunai's touch. But it never came. The Sunai took another step, but its hand swept toward Leo, its shadow fingers closing around his throat. Leo gasped in surprise, but couldn't pull away. He fought, clawing at the monster's grip, but its hold was unbreakable, its strength absolute.
"What are you
demanded Leo, but then the creature's grip tightened, cutting him off. It leaned in and whispered something in Leo's ear, and Leo's face went from shocked and angry to blank. Not still or calm, just empty. Something began to rise to the surface of Leo's skin. Not black, like the Maokai's life, or red, like a sinner's. What came to the surface of the Sunai's skin, Kate couldn't process. It was light and darkness, glow and shadow, starlight and midnight, and something else entirely. It was an explosion in slow motion. Tragedy and monstrosity and resolve, and it swept over Leo's skin and wove through the monster's smoke, tracing the outlines of a boy-like shape inside the shadow like lightning in a storm. And then, like lightning, it was gone. Leo's legs folded and the Sunai sank with him, its hands still wrapped around its brother's throat. The Sunai knelt over the body as it turned to stone, and then ash, and then nothing. Kate stood, the red glow of her soul still hovering above her bruised and bloody skin, but its light was fading as it began to retreat back into the safety of herself. The Sunai straightened, the last of Leo's body crumbling away in its hands. A single beat of burning wings, and the ash was gone. And the Sunai lifted its horned head and turned its gaze again on Kate. It came toward her, crossing the space in two elegant strides. It raised its hand, and Kate closed her eyes at last and felt the heat of the creature's fingers, not on her skin, but on the cuffs around her wrists. She blinked and saw the metal blacken and crumble under the creature's touch. The Sunai looked down at her, its hand hovering in the air between them, edges wavering like smoke. And then it shuddered, a single animalistic shiver that rolled from horns to wing and down, through its body and into its feet, the darkness retreating like a tide, revealing black hair and smooth skin and gray eyes. August stood there, barefoot and shirtless, chest rising and falling. His wounds and bruises were gone. So were the black tallies that had counted out days, months, years across his skin. And for a long second, his face remained empty, his features too smooth, his expression as blank as his brother's. He looked at her as if they'd never met, as if they hadn't fled together, hadn't fought together, hadn't nearly died together. Then a small crease appeared between his eyes, the faintest edge of a frown.
"Are you all right?"
he asked. His voice was still distant, but there was something in it, a sliver of concern. Kate let out a ragged breath. She looked down at herself, her torn sweater and bloodied hands. "I'm alive." A tired smile flickered across his face.
"Well," he said, "that's a start."
Chapter 9. Nothing was different. Everything was different. They crossed the field in silence as the first signs of day seeped into the edges of the sky, Kate's eyes on the distant house and August's on Kate. Her shadow danced behind her, restless, reaching for the world and pulling at his senses, a gentle, persistent tug. He wanted to comfort her, and couldn't. There was this gap where something had been, some part of him he couldn't reach. He wanted to believe it was fatigue, loss, confusion, wanted to believe it would pass. The house was as they'd left it. The cars on the gravel drive, the front door hanging open, the body in the hall. Kate fetched her lighter from the grass and stepped around the corpse, went into the kitchen. August padded toward the bathroom where his violin lay splintered on the tiled floor, its neck broken, strings snapped. He forced himself to step around it, the way Kate had with the corpse. He recovered his shoes and watched his fingers tie the laces. His skin was smooth, no black marks running up his arm. He ran a finger thoughtfully over his wrist. 424 tallies gone. Erased. He straightened, his eyes drifting up the mirror. He searched his face, tried to remember the version of himself from hours before. The boy, clutching the sink, desperate not to lose control. Eyes wild and feverish. Face contorted with terror and pain. Every feeling sharp and terrible and real. He tried, but the memory was more like a dream. The details already fading. August? He turned to see Kate standing in the doorway, staring down at the wreckage of the violin.
It's all right, he said quietly. It's only wooden string.
He'd meant the words to sound comforting, but his voice sounded wrong in his ears. Too steady, like Leo's. Something rose in him, a ghost of panic, an echo of fear. But then it settled. Kate was holding out a black t-shirt. When he reached to take it, their fingers brushed, and he drew back sharply, afraid of hurting her. But of course nothing happened. His violin was strewn across the tile floor, and her soul was safe beneath the surface. The shirt smelled of lavender, he noticed as he slid it on, the fabric soft against his cool skin. August, said Kate, her voice brittle. Are you okay?
I'm alive, he said, echoing her answer.
She wrapped her arms around herself, but her gaze was level. But are you still you? August looked at her.
I've been tortured, turned, and I just killed my brother. I don't know what I am right now.
Kate chewed her lip, but nodded. Fair enough. She looked lost. August ran a hand through his hair.
I have to go back to V-City, Kate. I have to see Henry. I have to help my family, what's left of it. Leo said the fighting has already broken out, and
I understand.
There are two cars.
I'm going back too.
August frowned. Is that a good idea?
Probably not, she said, fingers closing around the silver pendant at her neck. But I need to see my father, she said.
Will you come with me?
August tensed. They'd come this far together, and he trusted her.
But the thought of facing Harker...
Why? Her knuckles went white against the metal. I need to ask him something, she said. And I need to know he's telling the truth. Chapter 10 Kate Harker sat on the edge of her father's desk, watching clouds drift past beyond the window, low white streaks over the city. Her heart was pounding, and her whole body ached. But she was here, where she belonged. Harker Hall was a fortress. There was no getting in or out without being seen by someone. Which was fine with Kate. She wanted them to know she was here. Wanted him to know. She'd done her best to keep August a secret, though. Told him exactly where to stand to keep him off the cameras. And here they were. It had taken 4 hours to drive back to the capital, and now the sun was at its peak, the city's monsters at their weakest. Music played from the penthouse's dozen speakers, the volume low, but the beat steady. August had wanted something classical, but Kate had chosen rock. She hadn't bothered to clean off the blood, hadn't bothered to change clothes. In one hand, she held the gun Harker kept inside his desk. In the other, the silver pendant he'd given her the morning of the attack. Kate had never been able to figure out how they found her that afternoon, in the bones of a building 2 blocks from the nearest safe house, or at the restaurant, or the house. It wasn't until she was prying the last screw from the metal plate that she understood. The pendant had cracked. The silver case splitting to reveal the chip inside. Sloane had never lied. But her father had. The whole drive back, Kate had tried to figure out what to say, what to do. She knew she should have just run, but she couldn't. Not without knowing the truth. Not without hearing it. August was tucked back against the wall beside the door, arms crossed, his fingers dancing absently against his sleeve. His gray eyes were miles away when she heard the penthouse doors open, and a set of strong steps cross the wooden floor. A single set. Even after everything, he was still underestimating her.
"Catherine?"
called her father, voice breathless, tinged with urgency, as if he'd just heard she was here, just heard she was safe.
"I'm in here,"
she called back, and a moment later he appeared in the doorway. His dark blue eyes raked over the scene, taking in everything except August, and relief swept across his face. It was almost believable.
"What are you doing here?"
he asked.
"You should be at the house."
"I was," she said. "But Sloane came to get me.
He said you told him to."
Harker's eyes went to the weapon resting barrel down on the desk.
"Where is he now?"
"Dead." Harker winced. She'd seen her father satisfied, and her father furious. Seen him cold and calculating and in control. She'd never seen him caught off guard.
"I told you I would do it," she said,
"when I found the monster responsible."
"Sloane wasn't
enough," she said, lifting the broken pendant from the table. "I just want to know, was it his idea or yours?" Harker considered her, and then his lips quirked. It was a grim smile, humorless and cold, almost apologetic. And in that gesture, she knew. "Why?" she asked. "Why break the truce?"
"The truce was failing. Without a war, the Maokai were going to rebel."
"What about the ruined brands? The monsters who clawed off their marks?" Harker shrugged.
"That was Sloane's idea, to shift the blame away from me."
Kate started.
It was the truth. It had to be.
But it was wrong. "Soon the monsters will rise, and when they do, the city will be mine." She let out a bitter laugh.
"You're a fool," she told her father.
"Sloane wasn't helping you. He started the rebellion and you played right into his hands." The smile slid from his face.
"Well then," he said dryly, "thank God you disposed of him."
He took a step toward her.
"You've proven useful, Catherine. You might be a Harker after all."
Kate shook her head in disbelief. "Blood means nothing to you, does it?" Harker's face hardened.
"I never wanted a daughter, but Alice did. And I loved her, and she said I'd love you. And then you came into this world, and she was right. I did."
Kate's chest tightened.
"In my own way. They say fatherhood changes a man. It didn't change me. But Alice, it ruined her. Suddenly you were all that mattered, all she could see. And in the end, it killed her."
"No," snarled Kate, gripping the gun. "Sloane killed her. I remember." She'd meant to knock him off balance again, to watch the shock of the betrayal register. But it didn't. He knew.
"She wasn't really mine anymore,"
he said coldly.
"My wife wouldn't have tried to flee in the night. My wife was stronger than that."
She raised the gun and leveled it on her father.
"Your daughter is."
His eyes narrowed.
"You're not going to shoot me."
"You really don't know me, Dad," she said, pulling the trigger. The sound was deafening. But this time, when the gun fired, it didn't take her by surprise. Harker's body jerked backward, blood blossoming out from his shoulder. And then he grinned.
It was a terrible, feral thing. Not a true Harker after all, he chided. My daughter would have shot to kill.
She squeezed the trigger again, aiming low. The bullet tore through Harker's left knee, forcing his leg to buckle beneath him. He gritted his teeth in pain, but kept talking.
I thought it might work, you know. If you survived, if you never found out about Colton, it could have been the best of all worlds. Maybe we could have even been a family.
There had been a time when that was all Kate wanted. Now the thought made her sick.
You're not a father. You're not even a man. You're a monster. It's a monster's world, said Harker. And you don't have what it takes.
She trained the gun on her father's heart.
You're wrong, she said.
Her voice was shaking, but her hands were steady. But before she could pull the trigger, a shadow stepped in front of her, blocking her shot.
Kate, stop.
Harker's eyes narrowed.
August Flynn.
Get out of the way, warned Kate. But he stepped forward until the barrel of the gun came to rest against his ribs.
No. I have to do this.
The words came out strangled, and Kate realized she was crying. She hated herself for crying. Crying was weak. She wasn't weak, and she was going to prove it. He deserves this.
But you don't.
August reached out and rested his hand over hers on the gun.
It doesn't matter, she said. My soul is already red. That was an accident. You were scared. You made a mistake. But this? There's no coming back from something like this. You don't want... I want justice, she snapped. I want judgment.
August brought his other hand to rest on her shoulder.
Then let me give it.
She met his eyes. They were pale and wide, and in their surface she saw herself. The self she tried to be. Her father's daughter. The tremor finally reached Kate's fingers, and she uncurled them from the gun, letting August take the weight. And then... movement over his shoulder. A flash of metal as Harker got to his feet and lunged. He never made it.
August turned and caught her father's wrist, wrenching the knife free and slamming him back against the wooden floor.
August dug his fingers into Harker's wounded shoulder, and the man hissed in pain. August didn't seem to take any pleasure in the task, but he didn't release him either.
You should go, Kate.
No, she said. But the truth was, watching Harker writhe beneath August turned her stomach. Her father had always looked like such a large man, but lying there, pinned beneath August's knee, pain making the red light surface on his skin like sweat, he looked weak.
Please, said August. Make sure no one interrupts us.
Kate took a step back, and then another. She met her father's eyes, dark eyes, her eyes, one last time, and said, Goodbye, Harker. And then she turned and left, shutting the soundproof doors behind her. It took a long time for him to die. August didn't draw it out, not on purpose, but the last of the man's life resisted. And by the time it was over, Callum Harker lay in the middle of the floor, his body twisted and his eyes burned black. Beyond the windows, the sun had started its descent. Blood dripped from August's fingers as he straightened. He still hated the sight of it, and he did his best to wipe it off before stepping out into the penthouse. Kate was sitting on the black leather couch, an unlit cigarette between her fingers.
Those things will kill you, he said gently,
not wanting to startle her. She looked up. Her eyes were red as if she'd been crying, but they were dry now.
That's why I'm not smoking it, she said. Plenty of other ways to die,
Her gaze flicked past him to the office doors. Especially now. She'd showered and changed and packed a bag, the handgun resting on top. Her blonde hair was free of blood and grime, scraped back into a ponytail, revealing the silver scar that traced from temple to jaw. She was wearing all black, her nails freshly painted.
"You could come with me," he said. "To South City. We can protect you."
But she was already shaking her head. "No one can protect me, August. Not in this city. Not anymore." Harker didn't have friends. He had slaves and enemies.
"And now he's dead, you think they're going to let me go free?"
No, he didn't. Even with Sloane gone, the Maokai were rising up. Harker's system breaking down. It wasn't safe here. It wasn't safe anywhere. They took the private elevator to the garage where she'd left Sloane's car. The sun was going down, and it wouldn't be long before someone went looking for Harker and found his body. She set the gun on the passenger seat, on top of the border papers and the cash she'd taken from the house.
"Where will you go?" asked August.
"I don't know," she said. It must have been the truth. She hesitated in the open door, one foot in the car, one still on the ground. August produced a slip of paper he'd taken from Harker's desk, the corner tinged with blood. On it, he'd written the number for the FTF, the codes to access Henry's private line, since he didn't have his own.
"If you ever need help," he said.
She said nothing, but took the paper and tucked it in her pocket.
"Be careful, Kate. Stay..."
He was going to say safe, but he changed his mind.
"Alive."
She raised an eyebrow. "Any advice on how to do that?" August tried to smile.
"The same way I stay human. One day at a time."
"You're not human," she said. But the words had no venom. She started to climb in, but he reached out and folded his fingers over hers on the car door. She didn't pull away. Neither did he. It was only a moment, but it mattered. He could tell, even through the haze. August's hand fell away, and Kate pulled the door shut, wrapping her nails on the open window. He took a step back, put his hands in his pockets.
"Good luck, Kate Harker."
"Goodbye, August Flynn." He watched the car pull away, and then he walked out of the garage and onto the street, toward the Seam and South City and home. They saw him coming. Word must have gone up from the moment he stepped into the compound, or maybe Paris had even called when he came through, because Henry and Emily Flynn were waiting when the elevator doors opened. Before he could say anything, they were there, pulling him into something more desperate than a hug. August sank against their grip and told them everything. About Kate, about Sloane, about Leo. He told them about Colton, about running, about leaving Ilsa, about the Maokai, and his brother's treason, and his death. He confessed, and when he was done, he sank to his knees and Henry sank with him, and the two sat there on the hall floor, foreheads pressed together. There'd been a fight, Henry told him, after August's call, and Leo had left, abandoned the Flynns and their mission for his own. They couldn't stop him. August had.
"I thought I'd lost you," said his father.
"You did," he wanted to say, but there was more of him left than there was lost. So he said,
"I'm here, and I'm so sorry about Leo, about Ilsa."
"She'll be all right," said Emily, touching August's shoulder. His head snapped up.
"What?"
August felt himself choking on the hope of the words, and then the fear that he'd misheard.
"But Sloane,"
Henry nodded.
It was a close thing, August. She got away, but... well, she got away. That's what matters.
Where? But he was already on his feet and heading past them toward her bedroom. He pushed the door open, and there she was, standing at the window with her strawberry curls, watching the sun sink over the city, Allegra watching from the bed. She was wearing a thin strap shirt, and even from the doorway he could see her skin was bare, the thousands of stars that had once turned her back into a sky, now gone.
"Ilsa," he said, breathless with relief.
And then she turned toward him, and August tensed. A vicious red line sliced across her throat. Sloane had told the truth, if not the whole truth. He didn't know how the Maokai had gotten away with his life, but he was glad Leo had put a pole through the monster's back. Despite the injury, Ilsa's face lit up when she saw him. She didn't speak, only held out a hand, and he crossed the room and pulled her into a hug. She still smelled like mint.
"I thought you were gone," he whispered.
Still nothing. He pulled away to look her in the eyes. He didn't know how to tell her about Leo. Ilsa had been the first Sunai and Leo the second. And Leo might not have loved her or anyone, but she loved him.
"Our brother,"
he started, but she brought her fingers to his lips. Somehow she already knew.
"I'm scared," he whispered against her hand. "I lost myself."
And it was more than that, of course. He'd taken in the soul of another Sunai. Even now, it burned through him like a star.
"I don't think it all came back."
She shook her head sadly, as if to say, "It never does." Her lips parted as if she wanted to speak. Nothing came out, but her eyes, those bright blue eyes, were full of words, and he knew what she would say. "Nobody gets to stay the same." She turned back to the window and looked out toward the city and the seam. Her fingers drifted to the still cracked glass, and against the dark, she drew a star. And then another and another. August wrapped his arms around his sister's shoulders and watched her fill the sky. Elegy. Kate drove west, through the red and yellow and green of the city, through the waste and the towns beyond. The car reached the border before the sun, and she handed the man the papers and waited while he looked from Paige to her and back again. She'd pried off the photo of a smiling child from the upper corner, glued one of her school pictures from Wild Prior or St. Agnes. She couldn't remember which. Most of the details lined up, but according to the papers, she was Catherine Terrell. It was her mother's maiden name. She kept her hands on the wheel, fighting the urge to wrap her nails while the guard read through her details. There were three more men at the border control station, one on the ground and two on elevated posts, each decked out in gear and artillery. Her father's gun was strapped beneath the driver's seat. She hoped she wouldn't need it.
"Purpose?"
asked the checkpoint guard. "School," she said, trying to remember which of the boarding schools was out this way, but he didn't ask.
"You know these papers don't grant you come-and-go privileges, right?"
She nodded. "I know," she said. "I'm not coming back." The man went inside, and Kate tipped her head back and waited, hoping they would hold. Her eyes ached from tears, but they'd stopped falling hours ago, and her shades were down against the glare of the setting sun. The radio was set to a news station, a man and a woman talking about the mounting tension between Harker and Flynn, a riot at the seam, the fact that Callum couldn't be reached for comment. She shut the radio off.
"Miss Terrell,"
said the man, handing back the papers.
"Drive safe,"
he added, and she almost smiled.
"I will."
The gates went up, and Kate pulled forward, out of Verity and into the world beyond. It was 10 miles of buffer zone to the nearest crossroads. 10 miles for Kate to decide where she was